Hello, my name is Matthew with CJSF Radio 90.1 FM. I am here with the band Stale.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey.
They just finished their Studio 6 session, and we're now just going to do a quick introduction to get everyone hyped up to watch and listen to this. Can you guys introduce yourselves and what instruments you play?
Hey, I'm Eric. I play bass and singer as well.
I'm Trevor. I'm the drummer, and I also sing.
Aaron, and I sing and play guitar.
Cool. So, I was first introduced to you guys when you were opening for Ivy Gardens, and something that you guys all just kind of mentioned is that you guys all take turns singing. I'm curious, how does that affect your guys' writing process?
I feel like it's just you got to keep it in mind, I guess, the whole time, because you're building vocals not just for one person. You're kind of building it for other people as well, obviously, clearly. It's cool just kind of thinking of, like, the skills that each of us have with our voices and kind of finding those golden moments to kind of... This would be a great moment for Aaron to really, like, belt out something emotional here, and a great moment for Trevor to have a really strong scream part. And, yeah, it's just kind of, like, considering that in the process of writing, yeah.
So do you guys all write lyrics, like, together then? Or is it like one person kind of writes lyrics and then you all cut up and divvy?
Different every time. I think when we first started, it would be like, you know, someone would come up with a line. But I think for the first chunk of our writings, it's been Eric a lot. You know, he is really good at kind of imagining our voices and what we could do all together and stuff. So he brings a lot of the ideas to the table and we hash them out and... You know, I think we're always open to each other's ideas, but I think Eric's got a lot of the juice in these first few songs that we've been writing.
Bring a little juice in, yeah, and then we kind of just build off of that. Get the baseline of like this is what we have the idea of, and then we kind of, well, I can do this even cooler if I do it this way, and then yeah.
Workshop all together. It's always kind of the three sets of hands coming in and making it the final product.
Yeah. Oh, nice. No, that's awesome. So, kind of building on this, in November 2024, you guys put out Days Like This, you know, EP single. And one of the things that kind of stood out to me as I was listening to it was it's got this really dark, heavy, and super technical sound. Did you guys have a theme or an idea as you were building that EP up?
Honestly, it was just like three of the first four songs we had written, and we just wanted to get something in there. It felt right to kind of go right with our roots of writing. We'll pick our top favorite songs at the time. We only had, I think, like eight songs at the time when we did that. But yeah, like that's kind of a theme just with our music in general. We tend to come home or come to a practice space after work, and we're a little tired and run down, and we have this dream that we want to kind of live out, and a lot of the songs are that energy of like, let's just get that energy out that we want to express.
Dealing with a lot of dissatisfaction, I guess, coming out of work and you know, just screaming it out twice a week.
No, that's totally fair. Yeah, like the as you guys are saying, you guys are like weekend warrioring, so that totally makes sense.
Yeah, instead of screaming into a pillow, we just scream into microphones.
Into microphones, and now that's good. That's interesting, because I was looking at you guys' Bandcamp page, and your tags include post-punk, post-hardcore, post-rock, and post-Malone. Shout out on that one.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, how would you guys describe your sound then?
I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, I'm always, like, really bad when it comes to genres and things like that. Like, really, it's just... It's a combination of all of the things that we like, right? Like, I don't know. We love... You know, Tool, we love Refused, we love bands that like give a lot of high energy and like more musicianship, but at the same time we're all, you know, sensitive boys, we're all sweethearts. We listen to Elliott Smith, we listen to, you know, singer-songwriters, and like we want to have a broad spectrum of sound. I think it usually comes across a little bit more in the post-hardcore realm, just because that's like, I don't know, maybe an influence of like kind of what the bass and drums are doing, but I don't know, it's really tough, grunge
was a word that we used a lot in the beginning, but we also found ourselves not necessarily sounding like a lot of grunge bands or you know, taking those song structures. I think there's a lot of elements that we bring to the table with Stale, so It was hard for us. I think post-hardcore just covers a really broad range, and a lot of bands that start out really heavy and maybe they get a little bit lighter over the years, they seem to nestle into the post-hardcore genre. So we just kind of settled with that one, I think, but it might not be true.
Yeah, I think basically, like, we like putting on a good show. We like making people want to jump around and dance, and we kind of just pull from whatever melodies and rhythms that kind of give that effect to us when we're playing it, and we want to make people feel that way inside and release themselves a bit as well. And that's kind of, it just has to fit in post.
Very cathartic, I think, to just let it all out.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we're trying to do, is just stick to our... stick to what we like in music, but also just kind of discover ourselves as well, and try to stay as true to ourselves as possible.
Oh, okay, that's totally fair. So, Aaron, then, you know, because you were just talking about discovering yourselves and all this stuff, I kind of have to ask you a question about some of your earlier work. Specifically, I want to ask you a little bit about Lion in a Fire and Gray Eyes. What can you tell us about some of that stuff?
Digging deep. Well, Grey Eyes was the last band I was in Ontario, my partner and I decided to move out west, so I just had to kind of make that decision between, you know, am I going with the love of my life or am I going with the love of my life? So I went out west, and you know, I love those guys a lot. It was Mike and Matt, but I made the decision to come out west because I was kind of residing in the same place for a long time. So I just took the leap, took the risk, and didn't really have any prospects for music out here. I was just kind of, I think I was off stage for maybe 5 years before these guys came out. But yeah, Grey Eyes was kind of my maybe first attempt at this kind of band.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was three people and grungy, kind of posty, post-hardcore-y stuff, but I feel like this band has taken a totally different direction, but those are my homies.
Fair.
And Lion in a Fire, I was just, you know, I make a lot of music at home, a lot of singer-songwriter stuff, or sometimes it can be, I mean, just electronic. I experiment with a lot of different genres, and I didn't know where to put it, so Lion in a Fire was kind of something that I started, and then as I discovered myself, I realized, you know, I could just kind of be myself, Aaron Mangoff, and release music under that, so I kind of just put the kibosh on Lion in a Fire and deleted all that stuff and moved on.
Not well enough. I did find it, so...
yeah. I forgot the passwords, okay?
Oh, okay, all right. Fair enough. So... with that being said, Eric and Trevor, I gotta ask you a question about Civet Gemi Horror. What can you guys tell me about that?
That's our high school band. Yeah,
yeah.
That was before we moved out. We were playing in my parents' garage, getting noise complaints and annoying them to no end. Yeah. But that's like Our first dream, basically. That was what we were doing when we were kids. We worked on that for a lot of years before we found a different band and then moved out in Ontario, and then that band collapsed immediately. But
it's like our high school band, basically.
Yeah.
Our first love.
Yeah, and these guys have known each other forever, so I'm just like the third wheel in the trio. Just like, God, what you guys have is special. Can I be a part?
No, that's totally fair, because I saw... you guys did a junior achievement performance, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I think my dad filmed that.
Daryl Day, right?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Oh, man. This is the city that Nardwar built, so we have to do this, you know? As he would say, you guys are sterile, man. We do need to know this, so.
That's amazing.
I remember that. That was a good performance. It was fun. I think that was, like, one of our last ones, too. And then we disbanded. Our guitar player for the next band... was in the audience of that performance, and he stole us. And then we moved to Ontario, and then he broke up the band. So,
oh, shit. Now we're here. Oh, shit. Now you're here. No. That's, like, a really good segue, because I want to ask, like, how did the Stale Band come together in Vancouver? Like, did you guys all, or I guess you guys knew each other a little bit before from Ontario. Like, yeah. Walk yeah. us through that.
We were on tour with our past band, Rosewood Annie, and Aaron was on tour with Starved at the Root at the time. And we had one or two shows together, but the first time. How many shows did we do together?
I think
that tour?
We just met halfway through the little tour, and yeah. we played at least
like three or four stops.
Yeah, I guess more that was Starved at the Root's tour. We hopped on to play a couple gigs, is what I yeah. should say.
On the way back.
Yeah.
Like, it was from Ontario, we went out east and met them on the way back, essentially, and we played shows yeah. all the way back to Ontario.
Yeah, okay.
But we played New Brunswick. We met in a horrible place. Maybe we can save that story for later. Yeah. I don't know. But, yeah.
The next interview, you guys can get into that one.
Yeah, we'll have yeah, to exactly. figure that one out. Yeah. Next
Oh, okay. So you guys met with, yeah, Aaron's other older band, Starved at the Root. And yeah. like, that was kind of how you guys started. Yeah.
And that's how we got to know each other. And then we were kind of just local bands together in Barrie, Ontario. Where I guess I was in Orillia, but I lived in Barrie and you guys resided.
And play shows together sometimes. Yeah, and
Gray Eyes
hang out.
And Rosewood. And
yeah.
Grab some drinks.
Hang out at Aaron's place and chat late into the morning sometimes. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I made the move out, I saw that Rosewood had kind of, I don't know if they were kind of going through different member changes. I'll leave that to you guys, your business. But I basically took the opportunity, knowing that they had moved from out east to Ontario to play music. I knew they would maybe do an even bigger dive and go all the way out west. So I was just working in a warehouse job, and I just reached out to Trevor. I think I just kind of had the idea, like, hey, if you guys make it out here, we could probably all work at the same place and give it one real go. So here we are four years later now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess, so if I got the timeline right, the band was officially formed in 2022, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's when we arrived in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I'm not mistaken. Or is it 2021?
I don't know.
I don't know what we're doing.
With dates. No, I think it was 2021, and then once we got the ball rolling, we just kind of yeah. said the band was born.
Our first jam was in, I think, November of 2021, and then we were just hiding in a hole for years.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just trying to make music and yeah. figure out what
figure
that
out
is.
Figure out what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. But honestly, like, the first riff that like Aaron came up with, we still play that song like on any set that we set up. So, yeah, it's a lot of our music has stuck with us from the beginning. We tend to like nail into the coffin just like every song. We make sure that if it's not working, we get rid of it, and if it is, then we really like stick to it. So, we've kind of anything we've made, we haven't actually like set aside. It's just been
fair. So do you guys find that like some of the songs or ideas from before you bring back up into new stuff, or
yeah, probably like subconsciously little riffs will make yeah. their way back in, but like yeah, we just spent a lot of time constructing like what we think is like the perfect little nugget basically, and sure. Yeah, that's kind of it. Yeah,
nice. So then like, how have you guys found the Vancouver scene? Like, now that you've been here for a few years, we were talking earlier before the show about how, Eric, you were saying it's kind of hard to find shows that you guys really slot into. Like, how's the scene treating you guys?
Yeah, I feel like the scene here is great. There's so much good music, so many great bands, and we always have a blast meeting new bands and going to new venues. But we've had, like, a rare set of gigs that were like perfect for our kind of genre that we play, and mm-hmm. some of those, sadly, like Grey Lab was like probably like the best spot for us. We had amazing shows there, and it was always like the bills made perfect sense for like who was playing in what order and whatnot, but that place kind of died. Mm. But there's more places around, but yeah, it's just kind of working hard to get on those bills that we want to get on, and yeah, that's really it.
No, that's fair. So are there any bands that you guys have been watching or listening to recently in the Vancouver scene or in the Canadian scene that you guys want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I'll say Gadfly. They practice right next to us, and they're awesome. Super cool. Like, yeah, really cool. Worth checking out. Sundress is really cool, too. We played a couple shows with them this past year, and they're great. They're just great.
I think, I don't know if they're disbanded. Maybe they got back, but I was there with Chain Whip had a show with Pack Rat, I believe, and both of those bands were really sick. I was really blown away. just by like just the raw punk energy. I really like love punk rock. No Means No was one of my favorite bands growing up, so to see like local bands kind of still doing that, I think is awesome. And then also a band called Banana House. I really enjoyed them. Yeah, they blew me away.
I think for me, Luella. I really like Luella, and they, from the get-go, they were really kind to us, and they were actually the first band to get us into Grey Lab, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was natural, and I love their music. I listen to it all the time, and they've got new stuff coming out, so I think if you don't know Luella, definitely look them up. And then I was at the Rickshaw, and I saw Emma Golding, and that's some heavy stuff. It's pretty crazy. They have a good time live. There's like dance music between songs, and it's just grooving. And then super chaotic heavy music is what they do. So, those will be my two picks.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. This is Stale, the band. We're going to be releasing, or is it the band Stale? Which one do you guys?
It's just Stale.
Stale.
All right, cool. So this is Stale on CJSF Radio. We're going to be dropping that Studio 6 some point in the near future, but this is part of the promo run. Just want to thank you guys again for coming out.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man.
Reporting from North Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. North Shore Community Resources is a nonprofit organization based in North Vancouver that provides programs and services aimed towards enhancing community and individual well-being on the North Shore. This encompasses a lot, including support resources for parents, children, and seniors, sharing local volunteer opportunities, and providing legal services, which includes support regarding housing and tenancy. Throughout the month of January, North Shore Community Resources has been hosting a series of workshops on residential tenancy. The goal of these workshops is to educate those in attendance about the rights and responsibilities of tenants, as well as landlords. To learn more about what these workshops entail, we reached out to Zabi Rehman, legal advocate at North Shore Community Resources. We got in touch and sat down for a conversation about these residential tenancy workshops being hosted throughout the North Shore during the month of January.
Sure. So I am a legal advocate here. I graduated law school a couple of years ago, and I've been working here for mostly pretty much ever since. We have a couple other legal advocates, a family law advocate as well, and then another community law advocate who works in the same kind of position that I do. His name's Nicholas Smith. He's also our manager. So basically what we do is, our director basically calls it the necessities of life law, that we basically help people with anything that is kind of like the basic needs that people need. So that includes mainly stuff like tenancy, employment, employment insurance, and a lot of income assistance as well. So basically anything that people need regarding any of those programs, we're able to assist them with it.
Okay. And could you explain these workshops to me? What do they specifically entail?
So these workshops, we have workshops on a variety of topics, but the ones that we have coming up are all just happen to be on tenancy law. So basically the kind of stuff that we cover is it's kind of just like a broad view of tenancy issues that people have come up. There's too much stuff for us to really go like super in depth into every little thing, but it's kind of just like a bird's eye view of everything. So we kind of go over briefly the residential tenancy branch and the Residential Tenancy Act. The Tenancy Act is just the legislation that kind of provides all the rules that will apply for people. And the Residential Tenancy Branch is the section of the government that actually applies those rules and governs them. So we talk about tenancy agreements, how important they are. We talk about the rules around having roommates, things about rent payments, deposits, fees, condition inspections, repairs and maintenance is a big one that comes up. A lot of like questions about like what, you know, a tenant's rights and responsibilities are and what the landlord's rights and responsibilities are in various circumstances. And we also talk about how tenancies end, how to move out if you want to move out, how a landlord can evict you if they're trying to evict you. And a big part of that also is dispute resolution. So what you can do if your landlord tries to do something you're not happy with, or if you've got a problem with a roommate, a neighbor even, and basically just kind of what your legal options would be for dealing with these circumstances.
So that feels very all-encompassing overall. I guess another thing I was curious about is what spurred your organization to start hosting these. You know, were you witnessing sort of a gap in knowledge surrounding tenancy law that needed to be filled?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely find that a lot of people come to us not really having any clue what their rights are in a certain situation. A lot of the time that's tenants who, you know, their landlord might be taking advantage of them in one way or another, and they don't really know, you know, what grounds they have to stand up for themselves, right? Like what their landlord is allowed to do to them and what's off limits. So we definitely want people to just kind of be aware of what rights they have. We also, part of it too, is that a lot of time people come to us kind of late in the situation. So sometimes it's, a lot of these issues are time sensitive. So it can be difficult in some cases to help people if they're kind of coming to us towards, you know, after a period of time when they actually could have, you know, contacted somebody about it or filed for some kind of dispute. Sometimes it's a little late to actually do something like that, and which just kind of, you know, trying to find the best resolution in a bad situation. So the more aware people can be of their rights to kind of prevent those situations from coming up, I think the better.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I had noticed looking into these tenancy workshops is that it's pretty explicitly stated that these are meant for both renters and landlords as well. Mm-hmm. Why did you feel that was important to stress, and how do you balance, I guess, the needs and the knowledge to give when both groups, I feel like, often mm-hmm. are considered to be like pitted against one another?
Yeah, absolutely. So like our organization, like our the actual direct services that we provide are limited to tenants, but for these workshops, we did think it was important to kind of have it open to everybody. Part of the reason for that is that a lot of landlords themselves don't necessarily know what rights and responsibilities they have. So sometimes, you know, they might violate some rights that a tenant have, or, you know, kind of take advantage in some way without actually meaning to do so, just because they don't actually necessarily know what they're supposed to do for their tenants or what their tenants are supposed to do in return. So generally, I think just the more aware that people are about these things, the more we can get ahead of certain issues and prevent disputes from coming up. And it's part of it is just to kind of let people know that basically any kind of disagreement, any kind of issue you have, there is a system in place to where you can at least try to find an answer for it or try to find some resolution for it. A lot of time people will try to take things into their own hands, and it can, you know, kind of spiral and make situations worse. So generally, I think for these workshops, we're mostly just kind of trying to give out information rather than specific advice to people. And that information we think it really is just helpful to everyone generally.
For any past workshops regarding tenancy that North Shore Community Resources has done, has there been any sort of information or aspect of tenancy law that has really grabbed people or made people think like, oh, wow, I had no idea that was something I needed to consider?
Yeah, there are a couple things. One thing is people don't necessarily know how important the tenancy agreements and the Tenancy Act are. So your agreement is really important because it will set out, it's basically like the primary document that will set out most of the rules between you and your landlord. So making sure that you don't agree to anything that, you know, doesn't actually sound right to you or that you don't actually want to uphold yourself. And then also in terms of the Tenancy Act, one big part that we find that people are often surprised by, is that the Tenancy Act, like while the agreements are very important, the Tenancy Act doesn't actually let you agree to anything below what its standards would be. So it kind of sets like a minimum threshold for what the tenants and landlords' rights are. So a landlord can't actually get you to agree to anything below those requirements in the Tenancy Act. So the Act doesn't necessarily cover rules for every certain situation, right? That's part of what the agreement is for, is to kind of cover the areas that the Act doesn't. But for the areas where your agreement and the Act kind of cover the same issues, your landlord can't get you to agree to something that is against the Act. So certain things like security deposits and pet deposits, they're limited to half of your rent payment. So sometimes the landlord will try to get you to pay more than that, and that might even be in your tenancy agreement, but legally they can't do that. That's a big part of it, I think, is that people kind of just think that whatever they agree to, they're stuck to it, but that's not necessarily always the case.
And yeah, do you find that with these workshops, there's been a sort of demographic skew, or has it been, you know, a lot of longtime renters, or maybe people like now for the first time going into this market?
We find that it kind of depends on which organization is hosting the workshops. So these ones that we've had most recently and the ones that we have coming up have been with the local libraries. For these ones, we definitely find that it tends to be older renters. Like you said, a lot of folks who have been in, who have been long-term renters, who've been in the same unit for many years. We will also have people who have just started a tenancy, and then maybe an issue comes up, you know, after a couple weeks or a month or something, and they're not necessarily sure how to go about it. But definitely we found that so far it's skewed towards older people and towards long-term renters. It's also been, by and large, tenants. We've only had a few landlords show so far, or at least only a few that have identified themselves as landlords. But we're hoping to, you know, kind of, like I said, we're hoping to serve everybody regardless of demographics. But we found that in previous cases, we've also had workshops with organizations like Impact North Shore, which primarily serve immigrants on the North Shore. And definitely when we have those kind of workshops, we find that it's mostly, you know, recent immigrants who are attending the workshops rather than like seniors or anything like that.
Yeah. And the response for those attending has been good so far.
Yeah. Yeah. We found that, the response has been really, really positive. People have found it very helpful. We always leave room for questions afterwards too. So if there's stuff that we don't cover, then, you know, people can either raise their hands or come up to us individually and ask us as well. So yeah, we tend to find that people, you know, tend to get a lot out of it. We try to kind of answer any lingering questions that they might have and cover all the bases. And then of course, anything that we don't cover, we also encourage people to contact us, you know, after the workshops as well with anything else that they have. And we definitely find that people have had a very positive response for sure.
Once again, that was our conversation with Zabi Rehman, the legal advocate for North Shore Community Resources, on their upcoming residential tenancy workshops. The remaining ones for January can be attended on January 21st at 6 p.m. at the North Vancouver District Public Library Capilano Branch, and on January 29th at 6 p.m. at the North Vancouver District Public Library Parkgate Branch. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Hi there, this is Jan Arden, and if you're listening to something fabulous, well, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser University Radio, streaming on the internet at cjsf.ca.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. To get around the Phoenix, Arizona area, people often need to drive on highways and wide roads that cut through sprawling developments. But now the real estate company Cul-de-Sac is building a new kind of neighborhood in the suburb of Tempe, which is designed specifically for car-free living. Cul-de-Sac Tempe has apartments, shops, and restaurants all connected by sidewalks and plazas where people can walk and bike. There are no parking spots for residents, but they do get an unlimited pass on Tempe's light rail, which has a station nearby. And residents can rent cars for longer trips. Ryan Johnson, the company's co-founder and CEO, says the development is about half finished, but already over 300 people have moved in.
And it's the kind of neighborhood that millions of Americans want to live in.
He says living in walkable areas helps people connect with one another.
We have one resident with a family that says they've met more people living in 6 months in Cul-de-Sac than 15 years living in the suburbs.
And the neighborhood helps residents cut their planet warming carbon pollution because they no longer need to drive. So Johnson hopes other cities will follow Cul-de-Sac Tempe's lead and build more walkable, car-free neighborhoods of their own. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.